Welcome to the Honest Recruiter Podcast, powered by MRL Consulting Group, the no-filter podcast about working in the recruitment industry. Hear about real-life consultants and business owners talking about everything recruitment, leaving out zero detail. If you already work in recruitment or are thinking about working in recruitment, sit back and enjoy the ride. So hi everyone, and welcome to the 9th episode of the Honest Recruiter. Now today I am delighted to be joined by the wonderful Ben Hopkins. Now, Ben is our Talent Acquisitions Manager, or as I like to call him, our Chief Storyteller here at MRL. So Ben, before we start and we kind of get into it, why don't you tell us who you are and a bit about yourself?
What's so a bit like
a bit like a blind date intro.
So, thank you for that lovely welcome, Billy. So I have been brought in to look after internal recruitment for the business and hopefully add a few extra little bits and pieces along the way in terms of content, that kind of thing as well. So my background is I've been in recruitment now for just over 5 years. Started off with a local commodity search firm as head of talent there before we were then sort of taken over by merged with a larger business. During that time I spent just under a year in the States looking after TA across the Americas, which was an unbelievable experience. And then I joined a business called Hunted, who a lot of people in recruitment will know and who will follow people like Ed Hunter, the recruitment wolf.
But is he real?
He is, yeah, absolutely real. But they'd find me and kill me if I divulged any more information on that. And that's kind of where I learned more of the content side of things.
Yeah.
Still continue to do sort of internal recruitment, but for various different clients. But the content side was something I definitely learned from two of the guys there, especially. And then, like many, suffered the world happening with COVID, furloughed from day one. Unfortunately, myself and a number of others not being brought back, absolutely nobody's fault. Can't fault anything on that side of things. Fortunately, I knew of David, the big boss here, kind of known of each other through LinkedIn for a couple of years. Sort of sent him a bit of a speculative message, seeing if he fancied a social distancing coffee, which 2 hours later resulted in him thinking that we could do something together, me joining the business. I met with, obviously, yourself, a couple of the senior guys here, who thankfully all gave it a thumbs up as an idea, and now I'm 3.5 weeks into the gig, still getting used to a few bits and pieces, but so far so good.
So you're, like you said, you worked at Amex, didn't you, before?
Yeah.
So what made you kind of start then?
Okay.
What made you jump into the world of recruitment?
So everybody that lives in Brighton or has worked in Brighton knows somebody that's worked at American Express, right? It's the biggest employer in Brighton. And my mum worked there for a number of years. She was there for almost 40 years, so she kind of got me the intro. But I guess prior to that, so I actually started off as a 17-year-old, sacking college off halfway through my second year, going into cold calling.
What did you do at college?
Tell you sounds, oh God, leisure and tourism, the standard.
Leisure and tourism.
The standard crap that
so
you do when you don't know what to do. Nothing. I had no idea. Genuinely had no idea.
So what made you pick leisure and tourism?
A couple of my friends did it, basically. Other than that, I wasn't particularly sure what I wanted to do, like many.
Yeah.
Parents basically said, you can sack college off if you want, but you're going to go to work. So before, like literally a week before my 18th birthday, I started working for American Life, who were like part of like the Telegen, Smelly Gen and Stinkfish community, selling Well Woman Plus, which was a lovely female cancer insurance policy, which was really enjoyable, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Did that for about a year or so, then moved over to Amex, and I was there for 7-8 years, started off travel insurance, doing a bit of cross-selling on that. Then the PPI scandal all kicked off, so a lot of us were doing sort of PPI objections and stuff like that, basically giving people refunds. And then I moved into a L&D role where I was training all of our insurance products to anyone that came into the business that was in card services or whatever. And then I was made redundant there because for whatever reason, they stopped the requirement of kind of cross-selling certain products that we were putting across. Started in the welfare to work industry, which is essentially working alongside the job centre.
Okay.
So people that have been signed on for more than a year get referred over to a business. So myself, it was a company called Avanta, who are now People Plus. They get referred to a particular person who is their job coach for 2 years, and your role is basically to take them from where they are now, upskill them to a point where they're hopefully job ready. And which was incredibly tough, you know, dealing with people that are addicts,
yeah.
People that are on sex offenders registers, so pretty tough, like yeah. Pretty gritty stuff at times.
So trying to help them get
yeah.
Job, basically.
Yeah, basically, and obviously with certain people with certain restrictions, that can be really, really, really tough.
So would you say, actually, since then, I guess since Amex days, it's been about building relationships with people?
Yeah, absolutely.
Phone.
You know, and you're talking to people that, in that role especially, that, you know, can't read or write.
Yeah.
Talking to people that, you know, don't have the capability, that they don't have an address, they're living in hostels and stuff like that. So that was probably the toughest, but also one of the most rewarding roles I've done, because if you had a success story, it was amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was incredibly tough. I moved into a business development role. The leadership team got regionalised, and I ended up getting managed by a guy that was basically up in Newcastle, which, quite frankly, didn't work.
Remote management is never
yeah,
easy,
it's
is it?
Like, it can work,
yeah.
But it was hard because he was quite... controlling is the wrong word, but he wanted updates, like, 3 times a day.
Right.
And so when you're on a BD role where you're trying to, like, constantly like, cold call and talk to people, that's quite tough. The company that I then moved to, which was my first recruitment job, were based in the building next door.
No way.
So I saw a job ad for a talent acquisition manager literally in the office next door. So I literally DM'd the CEO of the company and said, I'm next door.
On what platform?
LinkedIn.
Oh, it was LinkedIn, yeah.
Yeah.
So were they quite active on LinkedIn?
Ish, I guess. They were quite a small business when I joined, to be fair. It was only when they merged that it was effectively 175 people business.
Yeah.
But when I joined the part that I started in, it was probably 10, 15.
Okay.
So I basically messaged the guy and said, look, I'm next door. Can we have a chat? Interested in the role? And then, yeah, moved into that. And that was my kind of first step into recruitment. Here you go. Here's LinkedIn. Here's a phone. Go and talk to people. And we were recruiting across the Brighton office, Singapore and New York, and it was basically my baby, and it was great. You know, it was like really, really good introduction into recruitment. You know, I've never worked on the other side of the fence, actually doing the agency external side of recruitment.
Yeah.
And then yeah, we like I say, merged with the larger business who I then worked underneath the global head of talent there, who was pretty much at there from the start.
Mm.
She was great, unbelievable mentor to me. They got me out to the States, and then my boss left. They then got rid of TA as a function, and I was given the option of staying put within the business or in terms of doing a sort of a senior delivery role or coming home. But the position I was in from a personal perspective, could potentially be a long story. So we've got a French bulldog that can't fly because of the nature of the breed, means they're not meant to fly. So we had to get a cruise ship.
Nice.
Home. And they only go out at certain times and obviously quite expensive, and I didn't want to be in a position where, you know, nature of recruitment is if you don't perform within a certain time, you're out on your ear, and I didn't want to be stuck in another country without a means to get home. So we took the decision to go back. So, and again, very thankful to them because they kept me on for 2 months longer than they needed to. But because we couldn't get the first boat out until April, they basically kept me on until then and said, yeah, stay put, and then we'll you go back when you need to go back.
And then you came home on a Caribbean cruise with all the holidaymakers.
Yeah, not quite. I mean, an Atlantic cruise is pretty grim because
yeah.
You don't see anything apart from water for 12
yeah.
days.
It's Titanic, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, we had the only dog on board.
No way.
To the point where...
Did he or she have to be in a crate?
No, she was in our room, so we caught. I won't go into too much detail because I'll get myself in trouble, but we actually got away with getting her over on as a service dog.
Oh, okay.
And so she was in our room with us, right. But she even got a mention in the welcome letter to to all 2,500 people that were on the boat.
Decent.
Saying, you'll notice there's a service dog on board, don't approach her, she's working, and it was just mental.
High vis on.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, so you mentioned internal recruitment, a lot of people, so talent acquisition, some people might be going, what is that?
Yeah.
Like it's a posh word for you are solely responsible for finding the best people locally to work at MRL.
Yeah.
So how does that work?
So as well as being having that title, you're effectively the face of the company for the local market in that sense. And unfortunately, it's a pretty ugly face.
that's a little bit harsh.
So it's not ideal at times. Doesn't necessarily get people sort of wanting to come and have a conversation with you. But my job is to try and source the best local talent for MRL by various different means. So like I mentioned, posting content on LinkedIn, which I learned at Hunted predominantly. That's a massive part of it. Because for me, if I can put something out that takes me 10, 15 minutes to write, and all of a sudden people are coming directly to me without me having to actually actively headhunt people, that makes my job a hell of a lot easier.
Yeah, and you're very active on LinkedIn. I think if anyone's listening to this and you aren't connected with Ben, and he called you Tom. Why would I call you Tom? There's no one called Tom that works here.
No.
You don't even look like a Tom.
I don't look like a Tom.
You look like a... What was
I used
you Ben?
To, believe it or not, I used to look like Tom from McFly.
Yeah.
Is there a Tom from...
Tom McFly? Fletcher, yeah. Big fan. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Tom.
But he's now I've got a beard and a ball. Now I've got an upside down head. So I don't look like him so much.
So everyone should connect with Ben on LinkedIn. He is, like I said, you just tell stories. And I think...
Yeah.
It's very endearing. I think when people... Recruiters live on LinkedIn. Like, it's... David will kill me for saying this, but we say phones are dead, internet's the future, but phones are still very important, but 90% of recruiters are living on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And the best place to reach out to people is going to be LinkedIn.
Of course.
I think it's not such a bad thing to connect with your competitors. You're going to see what they're doing. Connect with everyone at MRL. You see what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We connect with you guys, you connect with us. I think it's...
Yeah, I agree.
It's healthy.
I find it strange when, companies... I've heard stories recently of companies telling their staff to disconnect from members of other companies. I don't really get that. At the end of the day, you're all doing, you can dress it up as much as you want, but recruitment's recruitment, right?
Exactly.
You're doing pretty much the same job, so you've got that in common. But ultimately the content is a big part of what I like about the role, and David's kind of given me free rein to a point. With regards to
today there was a video of you dressed as Britney Spears.
Just to clarify, I wasn't dressed as Britney Spears, was I? You superimposed my head.
One day, Ben.
Yeah, maybe one day we'll recreate it when I've got the body that I want and that I'm happy with. But
up body and Baywatch.
Yeah. Body and Baywatch, face and crime watch. That's pretty much sums it up. But in terms of content, I'm a big believer, and this comes from. Again, from the guys at Hunted, Tom Wish and Tom Philby, I'll give them a bit of a shout out, to be fair. So they taught me how to write, and my style is everyone's style at that company was quite unique in the way that we all wrote. I like to, the way I write is the way I speak. I'm not particularly well educated or...
I think most people should write like the way they speak.
Yeah, I think because...
It's more human.
Yeah, and what people can then relate to me, because they feel like they already know me a little bit anyway, because they'll see how I write and think, oh, he seems however way you perceive me. And then if I then spoke to you on the phone, you'd be like, this guy doesn't sound anything like the way he writes on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I think that's wrong. I think that's...
He writes like...
Basically catfishing people.
He writes like he's in Downton Abbey, and you talk to him, he's actually in Towie.
Yeah, and I'm not. Like I used to get in trouble at previous jobs for calling people mate.
Yeah.
But that's just how I speak.
Like, I do it now on the phone.
I'm not, people be like, I'm not your mate. It's like, no, I know you're not my mate. I don't know you from Adam. But at the same time, that's just, a friendly greeting.
It's exactly.
It's the same as saying hello, for me, anyway. If someone said to me, hello, mate, I'd be like, yeah, how you doing, mate? Like, that's how I work. If you don't like it, not my problem.
So recruiters on LinkedIn, they see you.
Yeah.
Can they message you and be like, oh, hi, I want to talk to you about job, or does that happen a lot? Or
yeah, I mean, not a lot. It'd be nice if that happened, you know, every day and like 10 times a day.
Yeah.
Tech recruiters in Brighton, ideally. but you know, I'd be lying if I said, yeah, I'm flooded with applications and everything. But you do get people contacting you, and it makes the job easier. And if people feel like they can already relate to you, you know, I've had people contact me and say, I saw your post about a football team. I've just moved to the area. You know, can I have a chat with you about that? You know, and then eventually you end up talking to them about recruitment. Because ultimately, when people message you and when you have conversations with people, as much as they'll turn around and say, oh, yeah, I'm not looking, it's like, well, there must be a part of you that is slightly interested, because otherwise we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah.
So I normally, my first port of call when I have a conversation with anyone is I put it straight on them and say, you tell me why we're having this conversation.
Yeah, they've reached out to you for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or, you know, and even if they've replied to an email of mine saying, I'm not looking, but let's have a chat, I'll say, well, actually, why are we talking then? If you're not open to move, why are we talking? And then you start tugging at that thread, and then eventually they're, you know, crying into their lunch because they hate their job. But yeah, that's, you know, that's...
So what would you say then makes someone reach out to you? Is it particular pain points at the organisation? Is it... Because a lot of people would listen to this and go, well, people reach out mainly because they're on the target and they're going to get the jack. So actually, I'll just try and go somewhere else before that happens.
So I think my job is actually not too dissimilar to the guys that I'm trying to recruit. I think it's all about timing.
Yeah.
You know, when you approach somebody, you know, somebody might tell you no, but then if you approach them a day later, they potentially would be open.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, there are often pain points. You know, a big part of our selling point, there's no getting away from it, is the fact that we do a 4-day week, right? And anyone that says that that's not an unbelievable perk is like mental, in my opinion.
I don't actually think there is any... I don't think there's a better perk.
Yeah, I would...
Because I think having another day off, you'd never get your work done in 3 days.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I think the nice thing about it is that everyone's of the understanding that, yes, it's a 4-day week, but, you know, the world doesn't stop at 6 o'clock on a Thursday. You know, if you've got stuff that you need to do on a Friday, whether it's client calls, you know, for me, if it's a candidate conversation or whatever.
Oh, Ben, my laptop's at home every Friday.
Yeah.
I'm not working 6 hours. I'm actually barely working 2 hours.
Yeah.
You kind of just go, oh, I'll tweak this, or don't get me wrong, that's not all the time. Yeah. But, yeah, it's true. I think some people have that perception of you can't just be 4 days, or that's a scam. There's no way it's 4 days. It is 4 days.
Yeah, it is 4 days.
People
absolutely.
People sometimes pick up the phone if they need to.
You know, I look at it as, you know, we've got our first kid on the way beginning of November, and for me, like, my wife works in hospitality, so Fridays and Saturdays are her main days where she would be busy at work if she wasn't 7 months pregnant. So when it comes to that time where she goes back to work, Fridays and Saturdays actually tie in really nicely with my role here.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be lying if I said that I didn't think about it when I contacted David. You know, I knew that that was the crack going in.
It's always on.
But I have to be honest as well. You know, it's been a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
You know, actually, you get to the end of Wednesday and you go, shit, I've only got 1 day left to work.
I'd say that's probably the biggest learning curve, I think, from doing a 4-day week. I think it's, originally you think, yeah, that's great. And then you go, fuck, it's Thursday. It's already Thursday and I've not got that extra day.
Yeah.
So I think, we had trainers come into like time management training and kind of go, you need to really plan your head out. Plan your head out. Like, really plan the week out, and it's like less of that chit chat. And don't get me wrong, by saying that, this place isn't militant. It's not like head down, like no talking, you get the caned. It's very relaxed. But people just know we're adults.
Yeah, and I think
it's kind of, we know that we are rewarded with that Friday off. So actually, when we have breaks, that's when we chat. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that was one of the things that one of the guys said to me before I joined, actually. Actually said that the only thing they've really noticed since going to the 4-day week is that, you know, you won't see people hovering around each other's desks for like 10, 15 minutes at a time just having a chat. You know, there is still the classic banter, or whatever you want to call it, which you're going to get in any recruitment business. But there is a kind of understanding that, you know, you've only got 4 days to do 5 days worth of work.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're standing around having a chat, you better be, you know, hitting your numbers, basically. Sure. And I think that on the flip side of that, if you are you know, behind where you need to be, you should be working on the Friday.
Exactly.
You know, that's obvious, right? You know, yeah. You're only affecting yourself if you don't put the work in. You know, recruitment is that classic industry where you do get out what you put in. I know it's a massive cliche.
No, not at all.
But it's absolutely true. You know, if you want to just work Monday to Thursday and you can be successful doing that, then great, crack on. But if you're struggling, you sort yourself out and get yourself out there on a Friday.
Well, that's a lovely segue into my next question, which is basically what is successful in recruitment? Like, how you've worked, like you said, you've worked at other recruitment companies, you worked at Hunted, where you're representing hundreds of recruitment firms. How are people successful? Is it down to the company? Is it luck some of the time? Is it the environment they're in? I don't know. Is it kind of a mixture of all of it?
I think it's a mixture of all of it. I think from a personality perspective, you know, the main attribute you need to have is resilience.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be able to be told to piss off 100 times a day and still be happy to pick the phone up again and again and again and again. You know.
Do you think you can teach resilience? Because I would say, if someone said to me, I was 15, are you resilient? The first thing I'd say is, what is that?
Yeah.
I'd be like, what's resilience to start with? And I probably would have gone, no, I'm not. But I think over time, is it life skills?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. I think, you know, some of it can depend on your upbringing. You know, if you've had a really hard upbringing, you know, you could have that real sort of in-depth desire to make something of yourself, which people may have said that you weren't going to do when you were 15. You know, even going back younger than that. I would describe my, you know, from a, without getting too deep, my upbringing, I had a great upbringing, you know, no brothers and sisters, but my mum and dad, who absolutely worked their asses off to make sure that I never wanted for anything to the point where it was detrimental to their own finances. And only now in the last sort of 10 years has that been corrected. And that was because they were determined to make sure that I had the best life that I could have growing up. And because of that work rate, that makes me want to have the same for my family.
Yeah, you strive for that.
Yeah, so I know going forward, when my little boy is born in November, I want to make sure that he absolutely gets everything that he deserves. Not to the point where he's a spoiled little shit, because nobody likes that.
Yeah.
But I absolutely want to make sure that I can provide the ideal life for my family.
It's a mindset, isn't it?
It is. I do think it's learned to a point, but I do think there is something in you as well that makes you like that.
Yeah.
Nature and nurture, all that kind of stuff. I think it is a little bit of a mixture of both.
And as well, I think a lot of it is learning from your peers as well.
Yeah, learning from your peers, learning from your own mistakes. I think, you know, to be able to look at yourself and go, yeah, I balls that up. You know, absolutely, you know, is a big part of that. You know, I've managed a football team for the last 10 years, and the big part of that for me, one of the big things I always talk about, my two things that I talk about with my boys at football is work rate, because if you're not good enough, you can make up for that by working hard. You know, nobody means to make mistakes, but if you're working hard in the process, nobody can ever fault you that. And that's the only thing you can only control your own work rate. Nobody else can control it for you. Your own skill is your own skill. You know, if you're not good enough, you're not good enough. But you can control. You have absolute control over your own work rate. And the other thing is accountability. Mm-hmm. You know, historically, I've had a goalkeeper, for example, who he'll make a mistake and it's everyone else's fault other than his. Yeah. That drives me mental, because I'm like, if you put your hand up and said, sorry guys, my fault, I'd be like, okay, you've made a mistake. You didn't mean to lob it in. But that, you know, it happens.
I think that is in every industry.
Yeah.
I think, and that happens in recruitment.
Yeah.
Like, not here, but other places. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, those two things, I think, are so key in any walk of life. You know, work rate. You know, which, you know, we can all be guilty of being a bit lazy at times. You know, I have been. You know, every now and then, I hold my hand up to that. You know, but I'm also accountable for that. Because if someone says, you know, you could have done more there, and I think I could, I'll go, yeah, okay, fine. If I don't agree with you, I'll tell you I don't agree with you, but I'll listen to somebody's reasoning behind it. I won't just poo-poo the idea that I may have been in the wrong.
I think also a big thing is the whole training and development when it comes to being successful. I think I know places where you come in, you are then literally second day, they're like, well, there you go, there's your desk. After being in a boardroom for a day with someone and then like raise the phone, off you go. And it's like, that isn't training.
No, it's not
like
training.
That at all. And I think, I really believe we've got it nailed from a training side. And I think that's quite rare.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, you know, one of the things that we're talking about doing here is running an academy for junior recruiters, but that won't be any shorter than a month.
No, I mean, we've done that for the last 2 years anyway. Yeah. I think it's having, it's knowing where we do it next. Yeah. I think it's, and with COVID, the plan was to do it this year, mm-hmm. but obviously with COVID, we thought in like January, we were like, right, let's run it in June, do it again, 10 people in, that's fine.
And yeah. We'll... I think also the thought of once you've been trained, that's it, is wrong as well.
You know, it doesn't stop. Like, it's ongoing.
Second week I was here, you had
Trevor
in here doing sales training and everything, 2 day training session, and I've been getting invites from Kelly for the last however many days of him coming in again and again and again. You know, so that again shows a kind of a commitment to, you know, upskilling and not only maintaining but improving what's already there and drawing that out of people.
I think as well it's really important to have, so Trevor Pinder is an external recruitment trainer for people who don't know who he is. He has his own consultancy called Junction 9, and we have him contracted. I think he comes in twice a month and does full kind of day in, day out training, one-on-one sessions where everyone is kind of, at the end of the day, the consultants pitch to Trevor, and like you are literally like
in front of everyone
shitting
as well.
Yourself, yeah. Going, I've got to stand up now and pitch to everyone what I've just learned today. And I think, yeah, that can be quite daunting, but at the same time, it's so rewarding to go, I've just done this, and now get on the phone. It's a piece
and,
of piss.
And you know what? The other thing as well is how much you think of the cost of that as well. Having an external trainer in, you know, twice a month to do that in what's going on in the world right now.
Yeah.
To have that commitment to improving the people that are already in place, I think, is massive.
Yeah.
And you know, again, with David bringing me on board, that's another thing that is a huge commitment to the desire of the future of the future growth of the business.
Massively.
There's not many companies out there, I wouldn't have thought, right now. There's a lot, as we know, a lot of companies laying people off left, right and centre, and yet we've just hired a head of talent acquisition, which is just mental.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't think that would be a thing with what's happening at the moment.
I think as well, I think we've been crying out for someone internally to run it, because we do good things here, and it's, everyone's busy. Any company is busy, mm-hmm. where you've got, is it marketing, operations, senior management team, are driving strategy. So then to go, right, let's try and hire people, it's the one thing that is just usually left to the owners or another recruiter internally to find those people. It's not... You can't do that because it's just, it's too kind of scattergun.
I agree. I think that one of the things that I said to everyone that I interviewed with when I came in was that I found out what they all did in terms of internal recruitment, social media, etc., etc. And I took little bits off of each person to free them up to be able to do that. Like Kelly, head of ops, you know, basically runs the company. But she's dealing with like applications coming through the website and stuff. And I said, okay, well, I'll take that off you. David, what do you do? Okay, well, I do all the internal hiring. Okay, I'll take that off you. And with you, like content, I won't take it off you, obviously, because that's your job.
Yeah.
But I'll support you that.
Yeah.
You know, having an L&D background, you know, you and I are going to be running a few content sessions and workshops going forward. And I think to be able to, time is such an important aspect, not just in work, in life in general. You know, the people wasting time with things that they don't need to be doing is so silly. And if you can get around it, then you should. And I think that by having someone dedicated just to doing internal recruitment, that Kelly, I would imagine, is quite relieved that she can hand stuff over. You know, Terry typically has looked after the CVs and the SPQ assessment. I've taken all that off him as well, and that frees him up to do his day job, which is recruiting. You know, he's the head of the account management team. He wants to be spending more time with his team and doing that.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be fanning around with CVs and assessments and stuff. So.
And also, it puts you out on the map, doesn't it? Like you've been in just under a month. You're out all the time.
Yeah.
Seeing people.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way it should be. And I think it's people. We want people locally to start going, oh yeah, I need to speak to Ben.
Yeah.
Because Ben's MRL. Ben is MRL. Maybe we'll brand you.
Should do, really.
Get a tattoo.
Trademark.
Where would you get a tattoo?
Forehead, probably.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
If it was like anywhere we get a tattoo, we'll pay for it.
Yeah, okay,
and you
cool.
get on your forehead.
Yeah, definitely.
Fair.
MRL for life. Spelt 4 LYF. Yeah.
Not E.
No, no.
Just
LYF.
LYF.
Lif. MRL for Lif. Lif. But I think, yeah, I mean, the whole meeting people, you know, I've drunk more coffee in the last 3 weeks than I even want to think about. But, you know, I met a lad today and I probably knew when I went to meet him that he probably wasn't going to be right for us right now. But he took the time out of his day to message me and say, you know, he's obviously a fan. seen a LinkedIn post about the company. Seems like a really great place to work. Can we grab a coffee? Like, who am I to turn around and say no?
Yeah.
Like, why would I not go and meet him? Because ultimately, the advice I gave him at the end of it was, you're probably not right for us right now. Could be good for the academy, but actually go and get yourself 6 to 12 months experience with a larger business that will give you all the training and can chuck a load of money at you and everything and get you up and running, and I'll come and poach you out of them in 6 to 12 months. Basically,
Ben's honest.
But do you know what I mean? Yeah, there are certain hunting grounds that all talent acquisition people have
massively.
Our
guys here get poached day in, day out.
Exactly. So, you know, we all have our favourites that we like to go to. And he walked away from that conversation not with the answer that he wanted, because he ultimately wanted to come and work here. That's why he got in touch with me. But ultimately I feel like I've given him a decent experience where he'll go away from that thinking that wasn't just a wasted like 45 minutes having coffee. So that's what it's all about. I want people to go away from the conversations they have with me, even if they're no for now, where they can go, do you know what, I got something out of that, you know. Yeah. And having the knowledge that I do of the local market, especially from my time at Hunted, you know, I can give them hints and tips about, you know, who the hiring managers are, who owns this company, what they're looking for, and I can sort of point them in the right direction. And be, you know, brutally honest about it. I'm never going to sit there and slag off another company, but you know, I can give them sort of hints and tips along the way of the sorts of questions they should be asking for. And a big pet hate of mine and a lot of the people that I've spoken to since I've joined here is how they've been treated during furlough.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the lack of communication, yeah.
I'd say it's terrible, but I'm not a CEO of a company,
but it's difficult.
I can't make judgments.
Yeah, it's so hard because I feel sorry for all the companies that are going through it and the people that are being let go and whatever. A lot of like really good people that it's happening to. But I see both sides of it because for me, communication is so important in any everything you do in life. Communication is important. To have what's happen for the last, when was it? End of March, I think I went on furlough.
Yeah.
So you're talking the best part of 4 months before I started a new job, you know, and people are in that position and they haven't had communication with like their managers or the team leaders or whatever in that time. I think that's awful.
It's just a generic email.
But I understand also that it's difficult because, you know, some companies are literally they're worried about staying afloat, let alone talking to their people. But then
their company is the staff.
Exactly, and those people should be in theory be the ones that eventually will hopefully come back into the company and keep them afloat.
Yeah.
But so there have been a lot of people that I've spoken to that part of their big pain point has been how lockdown has been treated by the company that they're working for, whether it be being asked to carry on doing a bit of work on the side, which is obviously illegal, or just no communication whatsoever. You know, for me, there's no such thing as over-communication,
no.
Especially in a time like this. I think to keep people secure and like in their own mental mental health more than anything else.
No, massively. I think when we were obviously speaking to candidates to work internally, we've obviously got a pool of people, like you said, who have been furloughed, they've been let go.
Yeah.
But if you're speaking to senior people who are comfortable mm-hmm. where they are, but they're still flirting by having a conversation, sometimes it's just the tip, isn't it? To tip them, not the tip. Just the tip.
Just the tip. What was that? It was just the tip, don't worry.
As in, like, it's the tip of the iceberg to them to go, yep, I want to talk to MRL.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't people be scared of that change?
So I don't think it's necessarily people being scared of change. I have this theory. People say, oh, you're scared of change. I don't think that's right. I think people are comfortable. I think it's very easy to sit there and just tick over.
Yeah.
Be just the right side of average.
But if you're getting shitloads of commission,
yeah,
why wouldn't you?
It depends what you're, what you want yeah. out of life.
If your goals are.
Yeah, if your goal is literally just to earn an absolute bomb and do what you're doing where you're doing it, and you're on a better commission structure than you are here, which, to be honest, you do well to get a hugely better commission structure than the one here. And happily, you know, when we have conversations with people, we talk them through the calculations of what they could earn when they're here based compared to where they are. If that's your sole goal, then fair play. You know, you can't really argue with that.
Yeah.
But there has to be a reason why we're having this conversation, which is why the first question I tend to ask people when I'm on the phone with them is, you tell me why we're having this conversation.
Mm.
Because ultimately, if you're 100% happy, you're not on the phone to me.
No. No, of course not.
Why are you talking to a TA from potentially a rival business if you're 100% happy? Now, the flip side of that argument is I would actively encourage our guys to speak to businesses that are approaching them, which David might start panicking slightly if he hears that. But I've said this to him before. I said, you know, if you believe in your product and the offering that you have, you shouldn't be scared of your people talking to other people, which is why I find it like actually laughable that people say, I want you to disconnect with people from this company. I think that's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It reeks of people that are so scared of, you know, what else is out there. It just seems strange to me, and I think that for me, I would say to the guys here, let us know who's approaching you, what they're offering you, and see if, you know, because if they're offering something that's a little bit better in certain areas, who's to say we can't look at changing exactly. our offering to make it better?
Change, for me, change is good, and that doesn't mean leaving a job.
Mm-hmm.
It means evolving as a business. We've yeah. just changed our bloody products.
Mm.
Like, we've completely changed what we're doing from a recruitment company to stand out and make and have a true USP.
Yeah.
And yeah, that change is daunting. People are like, shit, that's a huge change. But in the long run, it will absolutely help us. And I think even for me, from a marketing side, I know every marketing person locally who does the role, and I speak to them because marketing's a bit different because it's not like you're enemies. It's not like you're an enemy. It's kind of, and it's like, I know recruiters from other companies, I chat to them.
Well, you're in a WhatsApp group.
Oh,
of just marketers, exactly. marketeers, aren't you?
Yeah, so. Completely. And I think it's actually healthy to kind of, to start with, it's like, oh my God, these are all competitors of mine. But actually, they're different markets. And actually, like you said, there's enough money in enough out there for everyone to have a piece of the pie.
Yeah.
It's just, it depends on the, I hate to keep going on the culture, but that is, recruitment's recruitment. Mm-hmm. The difference is how you're looked after, what the people are like, and the perks and benefits of that company.
Yeah, completely agree. Yeah, I literally preach into the converted there, to be fair. Like, I completely agree with everything you said. I would just encourage people to always be open to conversations because you never know what happens in the future. You know, I would want to be remembered as somebody that was open to always having conversations with people.
Yeah.
So whether they be, you know, an agency recruiter, you know, a search consultant, you know, whatever, you know, have a conversation with us because there's something there for everybody. I think, you know, we've got 12 different products that we can offer, I think, as a business across four like verticals. So you've got the
yeah.
contingent, retained, consultancy and marketing. And then underneath each of those, you've got three products
yeah.
or whatever. So, you know, most companies are just doing contingent recruitment.
Yeah.
You know, and if you throw another 11 options into a client, because it's not one size, I wrote a post about it typically, but it's not one size fits all in recruitment, and you have to be flexible and you have to move with the times. And I think the great thing here that you will know better than anyone is that our roles aren't seen as cost centres,
mm-hmm.
they're seen as profit centres. Exactly. So for you did a piece fairly recently which brought on our biggest client who has spent almost £500,000 with us since then.
Yeah.
As a marketing person,
mm-hmm.
not a recruitment consultant, a marketing person. You've done that.
Doesn't even go on my billing.
Exactly. You got probably a cuddle and a thank you for it.
But that's the role.
Yeah.
That is
absolutely.
The role.
You know, if you wanted to do that yourself, you could.
Yeah,
you know, and it's the same with me. You know, I look at it and I think about people that I've recruited in the past where they've gone on to make an unbelievable living for themselves, but they've also lined the pockets
yeah.
of that company, and I'm like, I brought that person into the company. That was me, you know. So that's why sometimes when you see when cuts are being made, it's often the back office guys, you know, the operations guys, the marketing guys, the TAs. But that's
why it's so important to stand out.
Yeah.
Because if you don't stand out, you'll get cut.
Yeah.
And exactly. As cutthroat as that is in this market, and now,
yeah,
I see so many marketing people getting cut,
yeah,
who are senior directors. And yeah, I just think you need to keep your feet on the ground and yeah, try and show you're delivering results. It's the same from a TA role as well.
Yeah, it's bizarre, but you've basically covered your seat now for the next 5 years, haven't you, with that?
Yeah.
And the rest probably, but
no, but, I want like 300 grand.
Yeah, yeah, well, you know, obviously, but do you know what I mean? It's yeah, so to be able to have somebody at the top of the food chain that understands that,
yeah,
is a big massively, is a big part. You know, like I say, how many companies out there are hiring a head of talent acquisition at the moment? It's not a thing because people are going, well, actually, we need to be saving money. We can't afford to bring in people that aren't like revenue generators. It's like, yeah, but see the bigger picture, where if you know, if I bring someone in and all of a sudden in their first year they bang out 300 grand, I'm going to be pretty chuffed myself.
Right, yeah. And it's long term. The pandemic, this is not a short term thing. That's not going to end. Sorry, it is long term, yeah, but not 10 years. It's probably a couple of years. But actually, the market's already booming back now. They're saying Q3 is going to be astronomical, yeah, apparently.
Well, so, well, Germany's coming through the other side, isn't it? Yeah. And that's fortunate for us because a lot of our work's done over there.
Sure.
You know, I think we are quite fortunate. Typically, the British market seems to be behind the curve, as it is with everything.
But like you said, a lot of our 80% of us majority, is outside the UK.
Majority of our business is done mainland, obviously mainly in Europe and a bit out in Asia and a bit out in the States. So, you know, hopefully things start to follow everywhere else, we'll be right.
So being 3 weeks in then, what do you think is the differentiator for us apart from a 4 day week?
I would say the thing I like is we're currently sat in David's office.
Yeah.
That he doesn't sit in.
No, he hates this office. He was, when I started, he went, so I've got an office which I never use. I'm on the shop floor.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about, like, you could just have that as your office. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why the fuck do I want an office?
Yeah.
I was like, nah. I was like, no way. I want to be on the shop floor with everyone else.
Yeah. No, I think that's important. A lot of CEOs or chairmen or MDs or whatever, you know, they like to have their own space. They like to not necessarily be in there amongst it. You know, he's a very approachable guy. You know, he's somebody that I literally, 5 times a day, I'll just walk up to him, yeah, and just have a chat with him about recruitment stuff, and he'll never turn me away. He'll always be open to a chat, and I think that's maybe not rare, but it's certainly not as common as I think it should be.
Mm-hmm. People say they're approachable.
Yeah.
But then it's
really approachable CEO. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Nah, it's not.
So I think that's a big part of it. David is a big selling point for the company. You know, you know better than anyone. When you joined the business, he said, "You'll never get me in front of a camera." Can't keep the guy away from it now. Like, literally on LinkedIn, yeah, you know, more often, right, more often
which
than I
great,
am.
Which is great. Yeah. I think it's a huge... And I think, not to blow my trumpet...
But you're going to anyway.
I think from doing that and pushing the guys more has made our brand be out more locally, yeah, which I think is a huge selling point.
Well, you'll be able to... Like, you can make it up if you want, but how many followers have we got now compared to when you joined? On LinkedIn, just lie, so it sounds good.
I think it's probably an extra 8,000.
Okay.
But in terms of internal applications,
yeah,
we've seen an increase of over, like 300%.
Yeah.
Of internal applications.
Doesn't surprise me, because I do think it makes.
Since January, we've had 79 applications to the website.
Okay.
Which is quite a lot.
That is a lot, yeah.
When actually before I started, we weren't getting loads because we wouldn't really advertise and yeah, we wouldn't really actually push out our LinkedIn. Our Instagram page is huge, mm-hmm, like not in terms of followers, but in terms of actual content.
Yeah.
We push out stuff all the time, and I think that's so important for us to push out the brand, regardless what it is. The recruiter wars we did, mm-hmm, like it's stupid, but it's just, it shows that we don't take ourselves too seriously.
Yeah, I agree. And me and Brendan have got an ongoing joke already, 3 weeks in, about the whole culture thing, because it is something that you see talked about all the time. Oh, it's just about the culture. Yeah, but what does that mean?
Yeah.
No, what does that mean? Oh yeah, we're just all really nice people. It's like, ultimately, most recruitment companies are very similar. It's about the slightly smaller things, like the well-being. Like, well-being is such a big topic at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anyone could argue without, you know, ultimately going to go back to the 4-day week, but ultimately you can't argue that that gives you a better work-life balance. Being open to ideas around well-being, I think, is really important as well. You know, the first thing David said to me when we shook hands about me starting here was, he said, your wife's 7 months pregnant, isn't she? And I was like, yeah. And he said, we'll get her on the private healthcare straight away. He didn't need to do that. You know, in like, from a government perspective, I think, you technically speaking, an employer doesn't have to give you paternity leave until you've been in a business for like 6 months or a year or something like that. You know, and he was like, yeah, fine. Spoke to Kelly, got it sorted, got me and Hannah on private healthcare straight away. You know, little things like that, which don't seem like a huge deal.
But it is.
But actually, that really, like, touched me.
Yeah.
Not like that.
Just a tip.
Really touched me to start. So I walked out. That was literally one of the first things I said to my missus when I find her on the way home. Mm. She said, how'd it go? I was like, yeah, I got a job and private healthcare from day one. Like,
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah.
Like, hopefully you'll never have to use it. Touch wood. But yeah, it is the slightly smaller things, that the intangibles that you can't necessarily see. I think what you do is a big part of the selling point here as well.
That's very sweet.
You know, and unfortunately, I have to give you credit. because, you know, ultimately, there are a lot of companies that yes, they have a marketing team, but it's very much a case of they just do stuff on the website.
Yeah.
And they just tinker with a few things and they'll put together the odd PowerPoint presentation, but
death by PowerPoint.
Yeah, but actually, you know, like,
which we do sometimes.
Yeah, of course, you know, if it ain't broke and all that.
Our job workshop will be death by PowerPoint.
Excellent. Look forward to that. I might be away that day.
Yeah.
But ultimately, like I said about the revenue that came in from, you know, piece that you put out, you know, that's amazing.
But we do it to help the guys. Marketing is, me and Hattie are here to assist the recruiters get deals, and we've had new people start and have gone, what are you doing? We have never done this.
Yeah.
And I don't know any other recruitment firm that actually helps the consultants like we do.
Yeah.
And it's quite nice, because I just think, well, this is normal. Like,
well, we've already talked about the fact that we're getting someone in for an interview who I know for a fact would massively appreciate the input from the marketing side, because he doesn't get that where he is at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, and so you will be a big part of potentially getting that person over the line, and if you fuck it up, we'll probably lose him, so no
and
pressure.
That person is
but there is that element to it. No, my first week, Hattie sat me down and said, talk to me about Instagram, and I was like, I don't really do Instagram. I'm, you know, I'm not a massive social media poster unless it's LinkedIn, really. So she's like, well, we can do this and this around internal hiring. I was like, that's great, you know. We're already coming up with ideas of how we can make that area of the business more visible.
Yeah.
Well,
we've got a great idea about a CV competition locally.
We have, yeah.
Which, this is a world exclusive.
It is. Go for it.
But even if you listen to this and it's like 2023, you'll be like, is this still live?
Yeah, is that even a lot of money now?
Chances are that's gone. But we're going to do a competition for the best CV.
Yeah.
And it will be in the thousands of pounds that we give you.
Yeah.
That's all I've got to say.
Yeah.
It might drop.
That's pretty cool, to be fair. I do like that. It's effectively you're referring yourself, aren't you?
Pretty much. So,
yeah. Love it.
Well, listen, Ben, this has been great. That was
Do you want to do that again?
Take two. Listen, Ben, this has been fantastic. I've really enjoyed today's podcast. No, seriously, it's been good. I think it's having you on board is great. I think having someone internally which actually drives the brand. Like I said, people locally need to know who you are. You're a nice guy. I love your peak caps, your flat peak caps.
It's because I've got a bald head.
You do, like an egg.
Yeah.
A hairy egg.
That's what my wife says.
Yeah.
Upside down head.
But listen, don't be afraid if Ben messages you. Ben is not a stalker.
I was going to say, that sounds bloody awful.
Ben is
don't be afraid if Ben messages you. Jesus Christ, man.
But I think a lot of people think of, you know, how many messages you get on LinkedIn by people, where it's like barrages of messages. You aren't like that. You aren't someone that is just, obviously I work by you, literally work next to you. So you're not just hammering messages to everyone. It's kind of, you're approaching people because you know they are good.
Mm-hmm.
So if Ben's approached you,
it's a compliment.
It's an absolute compliment.
Yeah.
It's like Tinder for recruitment. basically.
And like I said, just be open to conversations. Like even if it's not for now, it's always good to know who else is out there and what other companies are doing. You know, even if your boss is saying the same as I've said, you know, have a chat with that person to see what their offering is.
Massively.
Might even improve the company that you're working in at the moment. You never know.
And you might, like you said, you might go, yeah, it looks good, but not right now. But then actually in 6 months' time, you might come in for an interview and go, oh, there's that podcast I saw, the Honest Recruiter podcast. That's on every single streaming platform, including YouTube.
Ever.
Ever.com.org. So it's everywhere. So be open. Not even just for us.
Yeah.
Just be open to opportunities
more than
anything.
I completely agree.
Is there anything you want to end with? Favourite band?
Oh, my days. Oh wow, favorite band. I mean, I'm quite old school with my music tastes. I'm a massive Queen fan.
That's not okay.
I love Queen.
Worst band. Yeah. A1.
No, definitely not A1. Jesus Christ, man, I've got some absolute
bangers.
My least favorite band of all time.
ABBA.
No, love ABBA. Love all that. No, I can't really say I've got a least favourite.
Favourite food?
Chuck some more at me. All of the food, as you can tell by looking at me. I am a big Mexican fan. I also love...
Is it the food or the place?
I've never been to Mexico, but I'd love to.
Love a burrito.
The food. Love a burrito. I'm a big steak fan, which at the moment, because the wife being pregnant and her penchant for a red... No, not red. Rare steak.
Was that supposed to be French or...?
It was supposed to be French, right. Yeah. Was it...
Slightly German, but
slightly
sure.
German,
we're well with that.
I mean, we've got French and German office, so exactly. It covers both of those. So, yeah, I love a steak. Big carnivore. Sorry to all my plant-loving friends out there.
Yeah. My wife's auntie's vegan.
And to answer your next question, I hate mushrooms.
Okay.
I wrote a post about that as well, which is just ridiculous, but hate... with a passion, mushrooms, to the point where if something's on the menu and it's got mushrooms in it, I'll order it and say, can you take the mushrooms on? And I'll tell them that I'm allergic to mushrooms so that there's no danger of there being a trace of the horrible little fungus on my plate.
So if you've listened to this entire podcast now, I want you to message Ben with an emoji of a mushroom, and then Ben will know that you've listened to over 50 minutes of a podcast of us.
I can talk, can't I?
Chatting shit, basically, about chat. MRL,
yeah.
Recruitment,
yeah.
Mexicans, ABBA.
Not Mexicans.
Burritos.
Yeah.
All
better.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, listen, like I said, Ben, it's been great chatting to you, and I'm sure in the future you will be running the Honest Recruiter podcast, so you might be sat here, or we might change it to Billy and Ben's...
Bill and Ben, the Recruitment Men.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll create an image for
something
that.
Something of that ilk.
Yeah, we can do that.
Nice. Cheers, Billy.
Lovely speaking to you.
Lovely to speak
everyone,
to you, mate.
Everyone, please keep an eye out for our next one. Hopefully, we'll be keeping doing these. So the next one might be a special one for our 10th Honest Recruiter. We're still playing around with what we do, but keep an eye out, and we'll see you all very, very soon. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Honest Recruiter podcast. Don't forget to like, share, comment, and even subscribe. Keep your ears peeled for the next episode.